This is another conversation I'm having as part of the Just Fact program, which is all about reclaiming our food system so that sustainable, healthy and culturally appropriate food is accessible to everyone in Tower Hamlets and beyond. I'm Haseena Raja, the Just Fact mobiliser, who is in the podcast studio today with Shiri from Cooperation Town and Zoe.
My name's Zoe. I work with Just Fact Food Co-ops. It's been really interesting to learn about the world of food co-ops and cooperation and workers' co-ops, consumer co-ops. There's so much within food co-ops to learn about. It's great to be joined today by Shiri.
I'm Shiri Shalmi. I am part of Cooperation Town. We are a workers' co-op ourselves, so it means that we are a group of workers who own our own organization and run it ourselves, no bosses, no managers. And we coordinate the national network of community food co-ops that is Cooperation Town. We're based in Camden, but we work across London and across the country.
Would you mind describing more about what Cooperation Town food co-ops look like?
So the co-ops in our network or our movement are small neighborhood buying groups, essentially. So they're small formations, very agile. They're not incorporated. They don't have bank accounts or sort of legal status outside of 20 households on the same street or the same estate wanting to work together. And what they do is that they source food from different sources. We can talk about it in a minute, according to what they want. So they are, just like the workers' co-op, they are in charge. They own and run their own food co-op, community food co-op. Mostly they're organized around food, but they can organize around other things that are relevant to them. They all have different roles in the co-op because, again, there's no external managers, there's no bosses. It's not a charity, it's not an NGO. They are entirely responsible for running their own food co-op on their terms. So they make all the decisions. They decide, what to buy, when to meet, how to organize, how to relate to each other, with support and advice from us, with training that we do fairly regularly with members, cooperators. But the idea is that we trust our neighbors, that they already understand their needs, and they usually also understand the problems and the solutions to those problems. So, we're talking about people who live usually with low or no income. And, they don't need anyone external to, or we don't need anyone external. I'm one of those people to talk to us about our own poverty, our own conditions, the fact that if we are paid poverty wages by, exploitative bosses or pay, crazy rent to parasite landlords, we already know this. And the question is, what do we do in between those two ends? How do we organize in our communities by ourselves around these issues?
Amazing. So what are the benefits of this type of food co-op and organizing?
So just in terms of the kind of technical side of it, the co-ops, like I said, they source food from two main sources. One is food that we buy together in bulk. So I'm going to speak here as a member of a food co-op. I'm a member of Cooperation Lismo, which is in my neighborhood, but also as an organizer with Cooperation Town. The co-op source food from distributors, from markets, from shop, cash and carry, places that we can buy food in bulk, which means that we reduce the cost per item of each item that we buy. We also understand that none of us need a 25-kilo sack of potatoes, for example, at home. They would rot before we go through them. But if 20 of us, on the estate or on the street share that sack of potatoes, we all benefited. The other source of food is surplus food. So there is already a ton of food that is considered waste that is already in circulation. So we know that the supermarkets buy more than they can sell, and the producers sometimes grow more than they can sell to the supermarkets and so on. So there is this kind of, there is the idea that waste is designed into the supermarket system, which, let's be honest, controls like everything that we buy and eat. I think I usually always say, barely a seed is planted in this country without a supermarket saying so. but waste is designed into it. So there is already a huge amount of food that is considered, the supermarkets can't sell it. Nobody can make a profit on it. And it goes into that surplus system that is then distributed to different groups. A lot of it is going to food banks. And we can talk about the difference between those and co-ops in a minute. Mm-hmm. But we can only access that surplus food if we are organized. So I personally cannot go to the humongous depot in Enfield, for example, and get a few bananas. But me and my 20 neighbours organising together, we can get it. So that combination of surplus food, which is free in London, mm-hmm. which is great, and it should be, and the stuff that we buy in bulk means that we obviously save a lot of money. That is the first and the kind of most obvious and usually the reason that people... join a food co-op. We do save a lot of money. I barely see the inside of a supermarket, thank God, since I joined a food co-op. The co-op would not exist without the members doing the work of making it, happen. So we take different roles. We pack together. We unload the van. We are responsible for keeping the members list or, checking on the money. I come with my fiver in cash every week to my co-op, or I pay in advance, and somebody needs to, sort of another member would have to kind of count all the money, and we take turns doing that because we are all smart and we're all capable and we can learn from each other how to do those very simple tasks. It's a cycle. We can take all the skill and all the confidence and all the friendship and the relationship that we built in the co-op and do other stuff. So in my co-op, we're going to start a community choir because members just said, we want to sing. Singing together is nice. It's good. We all love singing. You don't have to be an expert. Or you don't have to be good in the same way that you don't need to be an expert to join a food co-op. Mm-hmm. We started a community laundrette because we have the space and we can put, a couple of washing machines there. So there are the food co-ops can be a kind of a gateway to wider community organizing.
Mm. And what is crucial for making Cooperation Town food co-ops work?
I suppose maybe that kind of taps a little bit into the difference between mm-hmm. Community co-ops and other forms of organizing around food. What you need to start and to sustain a Cooperation Town Community Food Co-op is a bunch of people who need to eat. That is basically it. And that kind of, we all qualify for that. Mm-hmm. The idea that the co-ops are hyper-local, so it's the people that live immediately around you, or maybe they go to the same mosque or the same church, or maybe your kids go to the same school. But you are near enough to your organizing space, which is another thing that you need. But those spaces are there. It can't be somebody's house because that's not okay. But it can be, again, the local school or the mosque or the church. It can be the local community center, the TRA hall. All those spaces belong to us already. Mm. They're there for us. Don't ever let anyone charge you for using those spaces for the community because they're ours. So you need a space to organize and you need to kind of reach out to your neighbors or the people who share your community space. Organizing a food co-op is very easy and quite intuitive because we all know what the kind of food that we want to eat, and we negotiate with our neighbors. Maybe I don't eat every food item that everyone else in my co-op wants to choose, but we take turns choosing as well. Mm-hmm. There is support from Cooperation Town, so we developed a starter pack. It's a kind of very slim volume with some tips and some ideas and a bit of the why and a bit of the how of organizing food co-op. How do I start the conversation with neighbors? Do I go and knock on random doors? How do I what do I put on a flyer? Mm-hmm. So all that is available. How do I make a shopping list with 20 people that I don't know? Actually, it's really easy. Mm-hmm. But there is a resource for that in the pack and online. There's obviously free and anyone can use it, and also anyone can adapt it. So different co-ops operate in slightly different ways. They all share the same principle of organizing collectively, democratically. They're not means tested. Everyone is invited. People take turns and so on. But they do it differently because we're all different. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't organize in English because they don't need to. Others, you know, go in and out of a space where they have no relationship with, for example, Corporation Tottenham in Tottenham. Mm-hmm. They use a space in a church hall where they have no relationship with the church, but they just use that room. Other co-ops are more embedded in the space where they organize. They might be members of the church or the community center.
I've seen that starter pack, and even though it's slim, it's incredible. It's so informative, and I feel like it really does set you up for like being able to just get off the ground with it. It's slim and straightforward. Yes.
And the idea of the starter pack and you know, and this conversation, and actually every time we communicate about Corporation Town, even if we communicate with our neighbors, is to demystify mm-hmm. the idea that you have to be some kind of expert. You have to, I don't know, have to have a degree to be able to talk about community organizing, or you have to, you know, read Marx or whatever. I haven't got none of those. So, and it's kind of, there's a tradition of taking community organizing away from the community. Mm-hmm. That's what the NGO do.
Totally.
And so on. And we're saying the skill, the confidence, the resourcefulness, the, you know, the kind of, again, the idea that we understand our own problems and the solutions, they're already in the community.
Yeah.
It's just about almost giving permission to people to organize, because we are told over the years and in lots of different ways that we don't have the permission to take control over our own literally feeding and eating.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it sounds like Cooperation Town co-ops become autonomous. How many co-ops are there now?
So there are about 30 co-ops in the network, in the movement. Mm-hmm. We know that there are groups up and down the country who organize maybe kind of Corporation Town inspired mm-hmm. Setups. So again, the pack and the website and, you know, this podcast is going to be everywhere. People can mm-hmm. take their idea. We don't control what they do. Obviously, they are autonomous, because who am I to tell somebody else what to eat? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But they are part of a movement. So when we do training sessions for, you know, kind of cooperators, peer education, again, it's, you know, we might come up with ideas or with a simple structure, but usually the knowledge and the answers are already in the people in the room. Different members from different co-ops can join that. They can rely on each other for support. We do have organizers. That's important to say. So as an organization, we are proactive. A lot of time people come to us and say, you know, how can I start a co-op on my estate? We also have relationships with community organizations like yourself, or with sometimes maybe the council. We help them identify like the places that co-ops can emerge and what support, you know, people in the community would need to start that. So a lot of times it looks like me or my co-organizers going into community hall somewhere and just inspiring people and kind of answering questions. And I'm going to say this again, like as soon as we think together, the answer is already in the room. People know how to organize.
And so for clarification purposes, I'd love to like explore now, how does Cooperation Town food co-ops differ from food banks, food hubs, social supermarkets, which sometimes also get called food co-ops?
You know, when we think about community food provision, we think about food banks. Mm-hmm. The main way that we are distinct from food, that, you know, the food co-ops are different from food banks, is very broadly the difference between charity and solidarity. Mm. So food banks and some of the other kind of options that you described rely on somebody else that is external to ourselves coming up with the idea, coming up with the funding, coming up with the capacity. You know, there will be a volunteer usually, or a paid, you know, staff member who would be providing the needy with hopefully their needs. But we don't know, because the people who are benefiting are usually not at all involved in any of the decisions. And that's the difference in a solidarity model. The idea, if we can just like super quickly define solidarity, is supporting people on their terms, not because I'm more experienced or I'm a professional or maybe I have more, you know, more resources. Maybe I'm a rich person who wants to do a good thing. I would not be doing a good thing if I do it on my terms. And charity is always on the terms of the giver. Mm. So in food banks, there is a really clear distinction between who's giving and who's receiving, and the only point where they meet is where the goods are handed over. In food banks, the people who use them have no control over what they're getting, over where the activity is taking place. They come in as clients. I think that's lots of time that term is being used. And weirdly, it's being used to make people feel better about themselves because it's pretending to be a shop. And I suppose that's where social supermarkets come in. They're outside of the supermarket system. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a Tesco. It is run in the community. Mm-hmm. And maybe people, again, I find it really disturbing that people feel more empowered if they are customers. But yeah, there is a bigger sense of control because you choose what to buy from a social supermarket. Mm-hmm. But again, you're not involved in running the social supermarket. I think there is more flexibility in that term, and maybe the volunteers also are using the supermarket and so on. I'm not an expert in social supermarkets, but maybe a good way to illustrate it is that in a food co-op or in co-ops generally, there are no volunteers because there's no difference between the people who are doing and the people who are benefiting. It's the same people.
In the UK, for sure, like food banks have become such a central part of what you've said around like food provision for like a lot of people. And they're, like you said, there's often limits. People can only attend so many times. They need to be referred. They don't have much choice. Considering that food banks fill the need at the moment in the UK of people needing to access food for free, have you found that Cooperation Town style food co-ops can fulfill that need for people? I guess a lot of food projects do rely on fundraising, including social supermarkets, where they fundraise to maybe pay for labor or they pay to subsidize food. How does Cooperation Town relate to funding and payment for food in the context of so many people not being able to afford it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And I think maybe first thing is important to clarify that there isn't just one solution. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I feel very strongly about community food co-ops for all the reasons that I mentioned, but they're not going to be the only answer. So we can talk about, I don't know, diversity of tactics, if that's like useful for somebody. But food banks, I think I can say quite confidently, are a terrible idea. Generally, they should not exist. And I think a lot of the people who are involved in running food banks would be the first people who say we should be cancelling ourselves. Like no society should rely on that level of charity. This is obviously a rich country. We talk about a cost of living. This is it's not a new thing for so many people. And we've been through COVID and there was like a wonderful kind of moment of, you know, people helping each other. But essentially we created a monster in our communities, in the heart of our communities, where the poorest people are reliant on really the people who are part of the problem. People are rich because other people are poor. So kind of, you know, continuing that model is terrible, but also it's not sustainable because food banks rely on just like handing over goods that were bought somewhere else, usually from the same people who again are exploiting us in all other ways. We know that the people who work in supermarkets go to food banks because the supermarkets don't pay them enough. Mm-hmm. So food banks and the other models that you described will always depend on some external funding, again, on the charity model. In contrast, Cooperation Town and other co-ops, you know, there's loads of different types of co-ops. There's housing co-ops, for example. They rely on their own members' contributions to and their own members' labor. So, like I said, in Cooperation Town food co-ops, members pay into their own co-op. They don't pay into an external organization. They definitely don't pay us, Cooperation Town. They don't pay my salary. They pay into their own co-op, and that collective pot of money, you know, if 20 people pay a fiver a week, we have £100 to go and buy food with. And, you know, and we buy in bulk. So actually we're buying, you know, usually members go home with about between four and five times the value of what they paid if they went to a supermarket. So if I put in a fiver, I go home with about, I don't know, 30, 35 quid worth of shopping. So obviously I saved a lot of money. And that is the money in mm-hmm. the food co-op. There isn't any other money. Mm-hmm. So the co-ops themselves, the 20 neighbors on the estate or down at the church or the mosque, they don't need to go to funders. They don't need to have fundraising experience because they don't need it. It's their money. There is, you know, for clarity, Corporation Town is external in that sense to the co-ops. Like I said, they don't. The individual neighbors in their co-ops do not fund us. Mm-hmm. That would be unfair. Mm-hmm. So I go out and you know, find the money. I do fundraising to sustain our own organization, but that mm-hmm. is separately from the co-ops.
And if Cooperation Town as a workers' co-op ceased to exist, these co-ops could autonomously keep going. Thanks so much for clarifying that. It was so much food when I could see that.
And that changes. Food that is bought in bulk, but also surplus food, that kind yes. of, that changes. It's not, there's no guarantee in terms of the surplus what you will get in your basket. But we know the categories. There will be fruit and veg. There will be stuff like rice and pasta and so on. Mm. I can say from my own experience, when I joined one of our food co-ops or the food co-op in our movement, I had to buy one of those really embarrassing granny trolley thing and my child would not be seen with me because it's too much food to carry home in bags. So it's a lot of food, but again, it changes. If my co-op, for example, if the member whose turn it is this week to choose what we buy for all of us chooses really expensive item, I hope they don't, mm-hmm. then there will be less food,
of course.
So when we do the shopping, we kind of think about, you know, what are the foods that most people like that are mm-hmm. most useful? You know, I'm going to say a potato is more useful than an artichoke.
Sure.
And cheaper. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and kind of what kind of stuff we didn't have last week and so on. But, you know, what would cover the most, what would be the best value for money for most members?
So we kind of talked about the difference between Cooperation Town food co-ops and other types of food projects, emergency food provision, food banks, and the challenge that they pose to big supermarkets and conglomerates. But we haven't talked so much about how food co-ops feed into the wider conversation around climate change and sustainability, and also social justice. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm gonna kind of jump back a little
sure.
bit. In terms of like the threat to like the big supermarkets, mm-hmm. like the big four or five, I'm going to be honest mm-hmm. and I say that unfortunately, we're not a huge threat to them. We are, you know, we are a growing movement mm. for sure. And there's a lot of enthusiasm for community food co-ops. But those big supermarkets still control, they don't just control, you know, what we eat. They control so much of our labor. So many people work in supermarkets. So many people are, you know, kind of adjacent labor to supermarkets. They also control, like, you know, you mentioned the way that we interact and how that affects the planet that we live on. Join a food co-op and eventually we will be a threat to them. What it seems now that we are kind of what we are able to shift as a movement of food co-ops is maybe more the kind of charity model around food. So I have been accused of disrupting the food system by people who run food banks. Not by people who run supermarkets, mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are quite invested in this model, especially if they're on the giving side, less so on the receiving. Mm. In terms of climate change, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all linked. You know, we can talk about the kind of the mechanics of it. So, you know, in food co-ops, there is less waste. There's hardly any waste because, you know, food arrives in bulk or in crates. It's already been sort of repackaged in some way. So there is just less stuff mm-hmm. that is run away. The food itself would have been considered waste, right? So the surplus food. So we're already kind of rescuing waste. And I'm not going to say that we're not encouraging supermarkets to create more waste. Mm-hmm. It is a part of a bigger system that we can't control. There is something about transportation. So, you know, all the people in any given co-op, they're organized in one space. The kind of the final mile is done by foot. All the food arrives like at once to one spot and all that kind of stuff. But I think maybe that's the point to kind of talk about the wider reason to be organizing in a food co-op. I'm sure, like, you know, we touched on it in different ways, but in terms of climate change and sort of wider societal and existential problems, what food co-ops or any co-op, what it gives its member is the sense of permission and the confidence and the skill to organize, to become an organizer. And that can be around any issue. And like I said, we can see that people who organize in food co-ops then start organizing it around other issues, around housing, around childcare, around, you know, bills payment and, you know, local, I don't know, health provision. Climate change is a huge problem. None of us can organize or can deal with this on our own. We have to deal with it collectively. It's a collective problem created by a minority, by a tiny, teeny minority. Again, the same people who get our rent and pay us terrible poverty wages and decide how we live. The only way that we can take any action against those people, which we should, is through organizing. And there are lots of ways to organize. You know, there's political parties, and there are kind of big organizations, there are NGOs and all that. And I come personally from a tradition of political organizing in trade unions, which is another way that, you know, people who are affected by the same issue come together to build their power together. But we can't do this, I feel quite strongly, mm-hmm. if we don't know our neighbors. Mm-hmm. If we haven't met our basic needs, you know, together with the people who are immediately affected by the same conditions. So, you know, we share more than a postcode with our neighbors. Mm. Often we share the same landlord. Let's fight them together. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to practice those organizing skills on something that is easy, that is completely risk-free, that is accessible to everyone. Anyone can organize around food. Mm. Once we've done that, we can organize, you know, at our workplaces, at our housing, you know, against our landlord, ideally. And then we tackle climate change together.
It's been so fascinating listening in, and I've been like making notes. You've spoken a lot about community organizing, and I feel that's really the heart of what the food co-ops are doing. Corporation Town, from my understanding, exists. I don't want to say it's an organization. How do I describe it? Because there's Corporation Town, and then there's all these individual local food co-ops, right? So in my head, you were talking about like they sustain themselves and kind of are autonomous, but then you work for Corporation Town, the big umbrella. So I'm like, okay, you fundraise for that. So if it was to cease and these things could exist without, if individual food co-ops could exist without Corporation Town, so what is the purpose of Corporation Town? How did Corporation Town come about and why?
So in terms of the relationship between Corporation Town, let's call it HQ, the little office where me and my colleagues sit together surrounded by food, and the wider co-ops, is maybe the relationship between like a movement, and we are talking about this as a movement. Corporation Town is a movement which has got a very, very tiny kind of office where me and my colleagues sit and we think about funding and, you know, reprinting the pack and maybe organizing training. And, you know, do we want to work with people in Sheffield who got in touch? And, you know, how do we support them to organize so far away from us? That kind of stuff. So, yeah, the co-ops are autonomous and they will exist without us. Corporation Town is almost like a co-op of co-ops, but without the relationship of support going from members towards us, it's only going the other way. So in order to print the pack, we need to fundraise. In order to sustain a website, we need to fundraise. In Camden, we have a hub, which is, again, it's a co-op of co-ops. So a lot of co-ops, 13 co-ops in our movement, use that space for logistics and organizing purposes. So some of them organize there, some of them just get their food through the hub. So there is some level of kind of, I'm not going to say centralization because we don't tell people what to do, but of mutual support between the co-ops, and that needs a little bit of infrastructure.
Now, it all sounds fantastic and amazing, and community organizing can be. And now what I want to ask is, I've heard like all the great things. What are the difficulties you have when it comes to community organizing? I know I do it as, you know, as being part of collectives or thinking in this very co-op mentality. It requires, you know, a consensus across all the members. It's like, what is the clunkiness? What is the difficulty? And what advice would you give someone who's trying to set this up? And it's like, how do I do this? You've got the resource, but you know, what's this human beings that you also have to deal with?
And that is basically the answer to your question. Yeah, it's about people. So I think that it's two different questions, maybe, if that's okay. So like one of them is like, okay, what's tricky? What's like the kind of, yeah, the ugly side of co-ops? I mean, it's not ugly, but we're talking about people. And we have been socialized forever, well, for the last 50 years, definitely, to be in competition with each other, to understand our relationships as, you know, power is always like either taken from you or given to you, all this kind of stuff. So it's quite tricky sometimes, or it's challenging for a lot of people, including myself, to kind of really unlearn those types of relationships. So there is no line management. Nobody is making decisions for everyone else. And we need to practice this. And we practice this, again, over something that is entirely risk-free. I mean, what's the worst that can happen if things go wrong in the co-op? Nobody likes potatoes. You know, big deal. Next week, don't get potatoes. But we have to practice those relationships. How do we relate to 20 people in a WhatsApp group that isn't your family? It's literally neighbors that maybe you never met. Maybe you don't like them. You know, I had members saying to me, well, I don't want to organize with her because she didn't come to my son's wedding. And I'm like, seriously? Like, you need to eat, she needs to eat. You can smooth that over because it literally doesn't matter. You don't have to be friends as long as you're respectful, as long as you include each other, as long as you, you know, carry the weight of organizing together. At the end of the day, you get food. If on top of that, you get friendship, you've learned skills, you do other stuff. I mean, that's a bonus, obviously. But yeah, there's always people who would want to take more space. And, you know, we thought long and hard about, like, what would be the best model to contain the loud voices, the people with the most confidence, the most time, the most wealth, the, you know, the people who enjoy all sorts of privileges, and at the same time to sort of amplify or create space for the people with the quietest voices. That would be women. Surprise, surprise. You know, people who are older, people who are disabled and so on. And we kind of figured out that the co-op structure, it's not perfect, but it's probably the structure that allows the most kind of equality in terms of decision making, in terms of who gets to speak, a kind of system of taking turns. So, you know, when it's my time to select food, I always do it with another person, another member. We choose it together. She might not be my friend. I'm saying she because it's usually a woman. We might not be best friends, but the two of us will have to like spend half an hour thinking about what would benefit all those other people. That they might not be our friends yet, but we share the need to feed our children. There is an expression that I learned from another co-operator who helped us a lot in kind of developing the model, and it goes, it's about making decisions that are good for now and safe to try. And it's really simple, but I think about it a lot when I make a decision. And obviously you can apply this to other parts of your life, but in a co-op, you know, we're making decisions collectively. Like, is it, how risky is it going to be? It probably isn't going to be very risky at all. You know, is it good to try? And we learn through doing. So, you know, in a co-op, there is no, whatever, it's not a party. You don't need to follow some kind of constitutional guidelines. I don't know.
Is there a manual for that? You've got a manual for how to set it up. Is there a manual how to deal with human beings?
That's wow. Part of the training that you offer. You offer different trainings on like literally how to cooperate.
Where can the toolkits be found, or manuals, or the training?
So the Cooperation Town Starter Pack is, it's like I said, it's a pretty short guide, I suppose, or a proposition, or how to organize. It lives on cooperation.town/organize.
If this movement grew bigger and it did become a threat to supermarkets, how does that then have a knock-on effect on food prices or like the challenges that poses? Because, you know, you said something like there isn't a seed that's sown without a supermarket say-so. And, you know, a lot of the food and where you're getting it from is surplus. I'm just thinking out widely, like when you do become a threat, what risks comes with that?
I'm going to say the day that Corporation Town or that community food co-ops become a threat to capitalism, because that's what we're talking about, I think we're good. That day, we will be fine. When that day arrives, that's where we're heading towards, right? So I don't care about the, you know, supermarket profits. The day that community formations that are collaborative and democratic and cooperative are actually a threat to the people who have been controlling our lives for so long and who are abusing us in so many ways and exploiting us in so many ways, I'm good when that day arrives. We will find the solution. Communities, you know, the solution is already in communities. If collaboration and cooperation is a threat to capitalism, that is the solution. You know, can't wait for that day.
Thank you so much, Cherie. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, Zoe, for this conversation. It's been amazing.